If I can remember to pages of the bill, that online session, page 4, line 7, we state that the authority is established as an organ of state within the public administration, but outside the public sector.
Number 250. The following.
I think that's in line with what the CAC has proposed in the main battery. They have also borrowed that wording from the SARS Act. Basically, what we're saying is that the authority is established as a juristic pattern and also as an organ of state within the public administration, but outside the public sector. what it means is that it will be a public entity, probably a Schedule 3 public entity, but because it's a public mandate, it will be within public administration, but outside the public sector. It means that it will be able to determine recruitment of staff, salaries and things like that outside the public administration. We have also looked at line 13.
Chairperson, I've missed the input that is making on line 7. I've just missed what you were saying. Please, yeah.
Okay. On page 4.
Are you all together, honorable members?
Okay. On page 4 of the BIP, line 7. If we look at line 6, the section 2, one, it says the South African Health Service is here by foundation. Now, I think that we should add at the end of that sentence, say that it is established as an organ of state within public administration, but also the public system.
Chairperson, I will read in the same document. I have B44B. Page 4, yes, I see page 4. And line 7. Oh. Line 7 is established. That's line 7. So are you saying after that established, what do we do? Okay.
Within the public sector, but outside public sector.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm. Yeah, we are in the same boat now.
Honorable Chair, I'm just thinking that because some of the amendments maybe it would help if we could make copies. I'm not sure that can be done of the wording that we suggested. But I think
that would
make
it easy. That would be quite concerning.
I
only have a few for the honorable members. Okay. Makes my life easy now.
Okay.
evening. I'm comfortable and okay.
Yeah.
On the same page, 4, line 13, what is being proposed is the insertion of two new subsections. That is after subsection 2. Before subsection 3, we insert two new subsections. The first one will deal with on line 12 we are proposing that we delete the existing paragraph C in the bill, which says that the authority is accountable to and report to the minister. We have proposed a replacement paragraph. Subsection, which means that subsection 2 of section 2 will only have paragraph A and B,
mm-hmm.
and then instead of C, we are proposing a new subsection, which will say that authority may inquire into, report on and make recommendations to the minister on any matter relating to the implementation or application of this act. What we've done is we've taken out the word accountable to the minister, which was causing some discomfort. What we've also added is that it's a subsection that seeks to make it clear that the authority shall perform inspections without any interference from any person. That we are proposing that we have as the new subsection 4. Which means they will have to be some renumbering. The existing subsection 3 will have to be renumbered as the subsection 5. The renumbering is something that the state government and ourselves can, but the principle is what I've just explained. There is also a suggestion that we think is fine. On the same page 4, if you look at line 25, where we talk about the previous condition.
Line 25.
Line 25 on page 4.
Yeah, C, 2C.
It starts at line 24. Yeah, that's C, 2C. Instead of saying has been convicted of an offense committed after the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa took effect, and we can simply say has been committed an offense. And sentenced without the option of a fine. Has been convicted of an offense. And sentence imprisonment is not optional of a fine.
Can you start it all over again? Has been convicted?
Of an offense. Then you delete the word committed after the Constitution of South Africa took effect. Has been convicted of an offense. And sentence. To imprisonment without the option of a fine. Committed after the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. Yes.
Mr. President, I was going to engage after they presented the whole thing. Yeah.
On the following page 5, line 8, that is subsection 9. We are proposing an inclusion of a sentence that says that the
nice.
Committee members shall not have a conflict of interest. We will find the better wording. But the point is that the committees that are appointed by the CEO, members thereof, should not have a conflict in relation to matters that they will be assessing the authority with. On the same page 5, we are proposing some substantive changes. Basically, what we are doing with regard to the governance of the authority, we are introducing a section that will provide for the appointment of advisory committees whose mandate will only be to advise the minister and the authority on governance issues. Now, the way we are seeking to introduce it is you will notice from the bill that line 11, it is the heading that says repeal of section 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, and 10. What we'll be doing is that this new proposed section will replace the section 4 that we were seeking to repeat. So the numbering, like I said, is something that we'll take care of with the statement like that. But the principle is that the old section 4 is going to be replaced by the new section 4 that appears on the document that is deals with the appointment of advisory committees. The number there is not cast in stone. We can reduce it to 4 or 5% per page. That was just our initial thinking. The idea is that this will be able to advise the minister and the authority on governance issues, but should not interfere with the actual functions assigned to the authority in terms of the act, like the registration of medicines, like the cancellation of registration of medicines. Those are technical scientific methods that we believe should remain the purview of the authority. Of course, the authority has the prerogative through the CEO to appoint technical committee, like we said earlier, that will advise you on technical scientific methods. As I was saying in that particular proposed provision.
So can I get it just a clarity just for me to be able to flow with that? Is it possible? Just
I thought it's a clarity.
No, it's not a question, it's just a clarification so that I can flow with the rest of the things if you allow me. Do I understand it correctly that line 11 where you said repeal of section 4, 9, 12, that one goes, and you then have that replaced by substitution of section 4 of Act 101 of 1965 as amended. Is that how I read it?
Yes, that would be the first head.
Okay, that repeal goes.
Yes, it would be the substitution of section 4.
Okay.
Then you have this.
Okay.
Then you will have the repeal of sections 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
I wanted to flow with that chapter. So repeal of section 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 and 12 still remains, But then you have included a new section, that the substance of section 4. In other words, you are not necessarily repealing section 4. You are just substituting it to have these things that are here. Okay. That's what I needed as a clarification. Thank you.
Are you fine?
Yes, I am.
Are you not sleeping?
I will never sleep.
Thank you very much.
So I was telling that because this Dr. Ramasara issue with the Wengare standard in the
Now, I'll tell you that we will say substitute because we're not only removing it, but we're putting something in its place. So that's something too.
Okay.
If I can take the number through the subsections of the new proposed section 4, like the first one says that it is the minister who appoints advisory committees. To act as a, to advise the minister and to act as a for the minister and the authority on matters concerning the governance of the authority. The second topic deals with the proposed number there. Like I said, it's not cast in stone, we can make it 5 individuals or 8. And the person is supposed to be connected to the authority. Subsection 3, the minister must appoint the chair of and the deputy chair of the committee after consultation with the members of the committee themselves. Subsection 4, we are simply saying that for the committee members shall be appointed for a period of 5 years, which is renewable, shall be fit and proper person, shall have the appropriate expertise, skills and knowledge, and experience, basically on governance issues, that the committee shall determine the process for its own meetings, plus subsection 6 is that the committee members shall not have, those who have a personal or financial interest will declare those. We could have chosen the option of simply saying they cannot have any, but experience as that is difficult to come across, would not have any interest at all in many of these matters. So we are leaving it to a situation where they declare and then excuse themselves for it. And that members of the community shall be compensated for the expenses that they incurred, determined by the minister. Obviously, with the minister, after consulting the minister of finance. That's in relation to the new section for that. We are saying the committee should tell us to consider. Now the last clause that we thought that warrants some consideration is the one that deals with appeals. That is clause 30 of the bill that which amends section 24A. Members will notice that in the principal act, a person who is aggrieved by the decisions of the Medicines Control Council, which is an appeal, with an appeal committee appointed by the minister, that we were proposing to move away from that arrangement, to say that it will be the authority that will appoint the appeal committee, like we have said, where the appellant will nominate two individuals, so the CEO and the two individuals, and then the CEO will appoint five of them in all. We have heard that there may be some problem where you have the authority appointing appeal committee members and also the appellant nominating members for the appeal committee. So we propose that we will head back to the arrangement where the minister simply appoints appeal committee members. And of course, we may build in that the requirement of you know, the conflict of interest issues to be dealt with, where the people should not have a particular interest in the matter at hand. Honourable members, those are in brief the proposed amendments that we believe can enrich the bill, and then we'll.
Thank you very much, sir. Chairperson, just a clarity-seeking question. I don't think it's sufficient to say that something is borrowed from existing practice, either from SARS or whatever. I really need to understand the meaning in line 7, in terms of what we are proposing. As an organ of state within the public administration, but outside the public service, what does that mean, you know, socially and legally? You know? But I might have limited understanding. You know, to assume that public administration and public service may mean
plus,
one thing.
Plus, the whole eight language.
And of course, it's my second language. I think we really need to satisfy ourselves in terms of the certainty of understanding and clarity on that particular thing. I'm not interested where it was borrowed, but I need to. I can't, you know what, the MPs go to funerals, go everywhere, people ask you about something, and I just say, no, it was borrowed from and it's good, but I must be able to say precisely what does it mean. I mean, it will make me, your explanation will make me wise. And I have not been aware for the last years of my existence of the difference between the two. That's the first one. But the second one, I am not sure. Look, even in the NGO sector, I just have given you Honorable Tolo one of the writings of the 20th century on the civil society and the state by Antonio Gramsci. You know? If I was in the NGO, I would call for independence over everything. It is in my interest. There's nothing wrong. It's a legitimate demand. Independent from the executive, independent from everybody, but be accessible to myself. So it's what Gramsci defines as a struggle for position, for power, for control. Now, this bill presupposes that these people and this particular entity is going to be established through public funds. But at the same time, it's not accountable to anybody. Independent, 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 independent. And only accountable to itself. I've got a problem with that. In terms of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, it's only the president who is not a member of parliament. A minister is elected, you must remember that, no? Who is mandated, who has got legitimate, you know, representative interest, in terms of public interest, using public interest, no? And my own civil knowledge tells me that the minister, whether you like him, whether it's from your party or not a party, but by law, is elected, no? To actually represent public interest. But now this process should perform functions assigned to it in terms of this act, without any interference from any person. It includes the minister. Minister cannot question their decisions, cannot ask them. It may be seen as an interference. I want to tell that. It really disturbs me. I agree with the issue around offenses without an option of a fine. I think it's in line with the Constitution. So, Chairperson, those are the issues that I felt. Maybe we may want to ask clarification questions around, no? It's a bit we didn't question the presenters, the two presenters who are making presentations this morning. I understand them from where they are from. They are representing private groups. I used to be in the student movement, you know, we caught some things. But at the same time, what we are meaning is that they should be independent, not say, you know, but should agree with us. No, simple. I'm not casting aspersions. As in Corpus, you know, we say that way. We say university must be autonomous. We're basically saying it should agree with us, but it's not agree with an apartheid government. Of course, it was an illegitimate government there. So, I just really want to understand philosophical and legal underpinnings of the two issues.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a sense. Yeah, I must wait for the seniors to speak. Jefferson, I must say that I think there's a movement now from the position of the morning up to now that there is something is getting shaped now. That will assist, particularly on the governance level. That was never there in the morning. I must say that the clause that dealt with the conviction, your line 24, where you're talking about such person has been convicted of an offence and sentenced to imprisonment. Without the option of a fine. What would that mean? Why don't you just say he has been imprisoned? What is the point of an option of a fine? If a person has been found guilty, whether you pay a fine or not pay a fine, you've been found guilty of an offense. I'm saying that to me, it's saying that you've been found guilty. I'm just having a slight problem where you classify it to say you have been given an option of a fine. My sense would say if you have been found guilty. In other words, if you pay a fine, it means you've paid a fine. If you don't have money, you won't pay a fine. You still remain in prison. So that's why I'm saying that for me, it's a matter of a person has been found guilty of an offense. Maybe we can start to look at what schedule of offense are we looking at? Maybe it's schedule 4, 7, and 9, whatever we can. Those that we say they are of aggravating circumstances. I'm just worried that now we're just saying you've been given an option of a fine. And if you pay a fine then, so 10%, it is that element that I think perhaps for me. I may be wrong in terms of a constitution, but a sense tells me that found guilty is sufficient enough, but we may have to classify under what type of offences are we referring to. Thank you. Chairperson, the other thing is where the authority shall perform functions without interference from any person. Maybe that any person for me I've written here, maybe we need to rephrase it. Because it is still vague and it has got a problem. Let me say I concur with the concern of Mr. the Honourable, sorry, Honourable T.A.T. Sedona. I also say to me it's a little bit vague. The other thing that I have is what needs to be sorted out is advisory committee. It's not defined in here. I'm not sure whether is it not necessary to define what an advisory committee is, so that now we now read it in the context of this bill to say what is the meaning of an advisory committee. That's what I think will happen. On the paper here that was given on the second page, where you're dealing with item 4, members of the advisory committee shall be appointed for a term not exceeding 5 years, which is renewable. I'm not sure how many a time will it be renewable. Is it just 5 years, you renew it once? Or is that what the law implies by saying, if you are saying renewable, you're referring to one, something like that. If I'm clarified with that, I would be fine. Five, the advisory committee shall determine procedures for each meeting. Why don't we set up a minimum requirement to say how many meetings will this committee have per annum or per financial year? Because remember that in the old, in this act that we're dealing with, I think the presenter indicated that the council was temporary and they met once after 6 weeks. And there was an indication to say the amount of work that they were doing was really too minimal because of the time that they take to sit and deal with matters. So I'm saying that if it's an advisory committee and we sort of say a minimum of 3 meetings or 4 meetings per annum, if they have 720, it's not a problem. But we do have even if they determine the procedures for the meetings, which of course they should do, but I should think we need to say how often or how many times should this committee sit in that particular year. The last one, chapter 10, is number 7, to say the authority must remunerate a member mentioned above and compensate the member of expenses as determined by the minister. The question that I had is that, are these those kind of regulations that come from the minister that will be developed once this becomes a law? I know you can't put a remuneration in the act, but somehow, if I'm clarified on that one, I will be very, very fine. Jefferson, the last but one, this appeal thing, I'm still not. Even this guy, well, the government, I will come back to it once we have dealt with other things, because I still feel there are matters that are not, we still need to do some work here. These appeals here, if I understand it correctly, we're not comfortable for now to say the CEO will, the appeal will go to him or her. If there's the complaint will go there. If there's an appeal, he's the one responsible to convene or run through the appeal, and with two people appointed by the appellate, or if my English is right. Now, if I hear, I'm not sure if I'm hearing correctly, that the appeal matters, because there are two versions of the appeal. There are those technical ones that have to do with the professional side, and there are those that are referred to the DG. And I think if I remember very well, you try to separate the two, to say those that go to the DG are not necessarily technical in nature. They might be procedural or things that really they can be dealt with at that particular level. But I'm not sure whether you said the appeal go to the minister, go out of the advisory committee, go out of the CEO, and then it be in the hands of the minister. If that is what you say, maybe that could be clarified. But if that is what has been said, I would be comfortable with that. Because the advisory committee and the CEO will receive the complaint. Now you need to take your appeal further than them, so that now the element of conflict of interest is really far from them. And when you have the minister, who is the accounting authority, that to me will suffice. I still want more of an explanation on this appeal procedures that are I'm not comfortable with. Chairperson, thanks for now. I think on the governance there are still matters to raise, but for now I'll let me rest here to give other people.
Thank you. This is all the time of the committee.
You can leave here at 9, don't worry.
Any other member? Or are you covered by Honorable Titan?
When is it like? You must change.
Honorable Tillman?
Yeah,
you are the next one to go.
No, the D can never come. Chairperson, no. I won't be
Before that, there's a tea ready. We are not going to break. as and when you need, you can grab a copy and have a waiting over to you on our website.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Well, Chair, I won't be very long. Just to say that I think it was mentioned by Mr. Sitona on I'm looking at a document proposed amendments before me. Line 13, the fourth item. The authority shall perform its function assigned to in terms of the act without any interference from any person. Now, it seems to me that as it's crafted here for now, it is definitely unconstitutional. Because in terms of the Constitution, Parliament does have the authority to call in anyone to govern the country. So perhaps we must just have a look at it and see how can we recraft or redraft this particular proposal. Then, Chair, on the appeals again, just to say that I don't know what was, I can't recall now what was the reason for Master Manus to appoint
against the decision of the DG relates to matters in respect of which the DG makes decisions in the Act. And if we look, there are not many such decisions. They may relate to the issuing of dispensing licenses, for instance, for doctors. I think that will find in section 22C of the Principal Act. Also, the DG issues licenses for permit for imposition of certain medicines. So those matters have nothing to do with the registration of medicine as dealt with by the authority. Now, with regard to matters that the authority makes decisions on, which are scientific and technical issues, that's where we are suggesting this other appeal committee to deal with this kind of matters. The issue relating to which is raised by the Honorable Suleiman, also raised by Honorable Sitona, in relation to the independence of the authority, interference from any person. It has not been an easy to deal with. Especially on the part of us grantors. We understand, and we made this point here, that in terms of Section 85 of the Constitution, the responsibility to develop and implement policy rests with the executive, which is the president and his cabinet. And that in this case, we have the minister as an extension of that, of that executive. Basically, that the regulation of medicine is the implementation of that policy. And therefore, there is no way you can divorce the minister from that process. Because at the end of the day, the buck stops with the minister in that respect. Having said that, there has been a groundswell of opinion saying that that should not be confused with the exercise of scientific determination. That's why you need an authority. Otherwise, why don't you simply say the minister shall register medicine? Now, we've been trying to balance between the two. That in instances where the Act basically assigns certain functions to the authority, we believe that the authority should be able to exercise those functions without any interference, with regards to exercise those particular functions. I can think of many. Amongst them, the registration of medicine. You wouldn't want ordinarily any person to tell the authority whether it should register or not register medicine. Of course, if there is a matter of public interest that the minister thinks it fit raised with the authority, the minister should be able to do that. Because you are saying someone that the authority reports to the minister, advises the minister, and the minister is free to engage the authority in terms of getting that kind of advice. In relation to remuneration of our vital committee members, as well as for the local decision, normally what happens is that we use the treasury regulations that are prescribed remuneration, it's actually some kind of reinvestment for the time they spend and for expenses they incur in attending those kind of meetings. On the issue of a number of issues around the advisory committee, whether it should be defined, renewable, how many times, simulation of how many times they meet, we are creating this committee as an advisory committee. It's not a committee, a standing committee that is going to be making decisions on its own. Now, if it's advisory, we believe that its meetings should depend on the frequency with which the minister engages in terms of seeking advice and things like that. So it may not be advisable to say they shall meet 6 times a year, when the minister may only need maybe 6 advice once in a year on a particular matter. The with regard to the renewability of the term of office, we have simply said it's renewable, which means it's renewable. The strict reading of it means renewable indefinitely. But if we want to put in time, we can do that. Like with the CEO, we have said the CEO's appointment is renewable once, which means he can only serve a further 5-year term and not more than that. So it stands, it's open to renewable many times. Define whether we need to define it or not. I think we can, but I don't think it's really necessary. Maybe the third one, but I don't know. I've dealt with the issue of interference, but the idea is that no person should be put to the authority on scientific determination. This is how the person should be. Okay, with regard to the previous conviction, usually the offenses that when a person is guilty of, or found guilty of, which do not have the option of a fine, these are serious offenses. And by looking at those, that if you're found guilty, then there is no option of a fine given, it means that's a serious offense. But if we're going to be looking at all the convictions, then we are likely to pick up problems. I mean, for instance, for all the drivers, I'm sure maybe they will be less than, well, maybe the less than is going to that here. But I would like to believe that many of us have paid basic fines many times. And some of them may have resulted into some kind of, the reason why the option is made of a fine, that should not be, you know, a conviction that creates a criminal record or something that you have. So basically to say that we are trying to exclude those that have been convicted of serious crime. I think that's the idea. One of which I think I've tried to cover all the including the ones that are not good. So no, on okay, let me deal with the public administration and the public service. Basically by saying that it will be within the public administration, we are simply saying it will not be in the private sector. It will be in the public administration. In the sense that it is such a public mandate. Not as I said that it will obviously become a public entity because it's established by such a it's not in the private sector because it's a public mandate. The difference with the public service is has this notion of employee-employee relationship. Because it's kind of a public servant in the sense of falling under the Minister of Public Service Administration, where the conditions of employment of all civil servants are determined from that particular department. That includes the discrimination of salaries, that includes the control, a number of other issues. Now, we're basically saying that this entity should be able to decide on those conditions of employment for itself. Rather than having to access the confines of public service, they should be able to employ staff at salaries higher than the public service if they need which is already happening with a lot of statutory bodies that many of which fall under health. But if we look at health councils, statutory health councils, health professional council, council for national schemes, the family council, and those entities, although they decide a public mandate, but they determine, as an example, the salary scale for the employee. Of course, it is the council, it is the CEO in consultation with the council that makes that determination, depending on the nature of the work that has been done and the expertise that is required in that particular budget report.
I don't want to sound to be a lawyer, not so true, no, by any definition, not by training, not by anything. Wouldn't it be better if you say it won't be regulated by the public sector, to cover that? For me, without being hooked, I don't care whether it's been drawn from the SARS or whatever, but it really sounds clumsy. it really sounds clumsy, it confuses. You know, these are referring for our learners at the universities, you know, when they write their assignments, you know, must not confuse them, you know. But if you want to, you have to define what is the difference between public space, both law, legally and philosophically, you know, must be able to say this is the distinction, you know. I'm just knowing this thing, you consider it true. On the issue of authority without interference from anyone, I really think I'm fine. It's difficult that you have explained. But I think we'll be abrogating our responsibility if we don't find a middle road wherein we really emphasize one fundamental point. I'll explain from my own understanding. Authority must be understood into context. And I'm going to use the Freedom Charter, which is the basic guiding policy document of the ruling party. Not according to Mr. Lekota, but according to the 1955
Constitution. We're not going to comment now. We'll see you outside.
The Freedom Charter says that no government can just claim authority unless it is based on the will of people. Now, authority has got two contexts. One, it's a legal power of that particular entity, yeah, to do certain things in terms of the law, and they become forceful, whatever. Yeah. On the other hand, authority can derive from expertise, knowledge, yeah, which is scarce, which I believe this is what you're explaining. They're dealing with determination of highly knowledgeable, you know, kind of environment. Yeah. Knowledge on scientific medicines and all those things. I don't believe that they are a monopoly. Even if the minister can assume that he or she has appointed the best of the place in the medical fraternity, yeah, they will continue to be discourse, they will continue to be contending views. Yeah. Interested parties on those issues also employ, yeah, I mean, authorities in their own right, from the medical fraternity. So, it is in two contexts, and how then is a thing without any influence from any authority, no? Where interested parties who are interested, have got interest in this thing, they are told, no, the decision of this particular question, because it is being decided upon by this, what do you call it, congregator, this body, no? This authority, no? Because it's composed of doctors. Yet those people will not just oppose that thing without getting an expert opinion from doctors. Expert opinion from people who understand medicine, you know? So now, in that context, how are you going to deal with that? I thought that final opinion in that respect, minister will not only willy-nilly say, because I've appointed this authority, the minister will consider or whatever, whoever, they will consider submissions from other interested parties, you know? And these interested parties will also avail their own expertise evidence to say, in terms of our own evidence on the medical side, ne? This is what we think should be the situation, this is what we think should not be the situation. And based on the balance of evidence arising from those particular contesting views, the authority must be able to make determination. And I think the minister must have the role, and it should not be, he or she should not really be imprisoned by this notion of interference, you know, because I may be that authority and say, no, look, minister, you are interfering with me, you can't do it, no? And how does the minister get out of that? I'm saying, I don't know, I'm raising, I know that I'm not raising an issue of law here, I'm raising an issue of philosophy, an issue of theory, no? But I'm saying it's quite fundamental. People have not elected that body, an extension of an elected authority in a land. It is appointed based on the constitution. Constitution has been adopted by people who are elected. Minister is elected, you know, cabinet is elected, ne? And the final arbiter on such matters should be the minister, no doubt about it. How we put it, I don't know. I don't disagree with independence, ne? Functional and operational independence of the authority. But in terms of its decision making, I think that particular word is too wide. And it can actually constrain the minister in a very, very big way, to a point whereby he or she will not be able, you know, to make intervention, even where it is legitimate in the public interest. Thank you very much. How do you look at it? I don't know, but that is my concern. I might be wrong.
Okay. Well, on the right hand note, I'll just say, I think the minister of the right to intervene, but not interfere. But, on the right hand note. Well, on the overall personally, I think this amendment is supposed to be and the responses by the department do actually address one concern, you know, but then, you know, just one small thing then, you know, where the issue is raised by Sona here. I see some honorable Sona. Now, when you explain what, you know, a public administration means, then I really feel that then there should be some, you know, perpetuation of the solution. Because an organ of state. The saying here is an organ of state within the public administration. And public administration means something that is belongs to the state and not in private. So it is a lot of tolerance. I mean, perpetuation. That's my little
problem.
Can you a little bit for that, you know? Thank you.
Yeah. Chairperson, now I can see something here. And that which I see, I was doubting. You know, this thing of view of advisory committee, it's a toothless body. It's a toothless body that will only advise as and when the minister seeks advice. We're still remaining with the authority, with the CEO, as it was. Because yeah, we're not even defining the presenter from the department, as he was explaining, that we may define the advisory committee. We may, in law, it means you can either do the you can either do it or you may not do it. Now, what I see here, there isn't any improvement. There's window dressing, because the issue that we're dealing with here is that there's no governance in this bill. What is being proposed is it's a window dressing, putting chocolate on a bitter sweet. To say, let's put an advisory body, which has got no power, no authority, but this body can, as and when the minister wants advice, seek advice from them. Their term of office is in perpetuity. Now we have a problem. If we're not really addressing the governance issues here, and it also touches on that issue of an appeal also is not done. I think let us be very upfront to say, if we want to do something that is like your central drug authority that we have done recently, let's be very clear about that. To say we're doing something that is in that line, but now those ones do have reporting lines, they do have governance. Here we don't have governance structures here. Presentation that came from the TAC also is actually querying those. But we are window dressing here. And I don't want us to be window dressing something that one day we'll actually regret. If we say we have an advisory committee, let's define what it is. And that definition will tell us what authority do they have. No, you can't. You have never asked for proposal there, Chair. Don't do that. Now you wait until I finish. Then, if I haven't addressed those things, you get with that. So, don't do that, Chairperson. Now I'm saying, if we say advisory committee, and in the way that it structures, I thought when we started, I thought we're getting somewhere. But as much as the officers was explaining, it now tends to me that a chocolate is put on a sweet that's never sweet. Issue of governance is not addressed yet. Because the minister may, as and when he wants to. But there are issues of regulations that need to be done. There are issues of accountability that the CEO should be doing. Because at some point, as we were doing earlier on, I saw something that started to say to me that the minister, the first presentation that you did, that was done in the morning, where it was explaining to say the Principal Act provides for the MCC, the registrar, and who was the secretariat. Now, there was something else that he said, but when you go this one, is that the CEO is appointed by the minister, and the CEO appoints staff. But the CEO is accountable to nobody except the minister. Now, we are a parliament, we are parliament here, who does oversight over the executive? Who is the minister there? Now, we must have an authority that on its own, it doesn't really run things in a way that there's no governance. Because if you don't have any governance, where is the accounting principles coming into play here in governance principles? Now, what I see here, as I'm saying, advisory committee to me is nothing. If it's the way that is being done here, they're not going to be given any teeth to do their job with that authority, then we haven't done the work that we're supposed to. That's why I say let's define, because the definition to me is to tell me what their role is. Members of the advisory committee shall appoint, okay, that term, be fit and proper, have appropriate expertise. But it doesn't say they'll formulate regulations. Doesn't really come to that to say they'll actually formulate regulations. And what are those regulations for? Those regulations are to make sure that the CEO is accountable to that particular committee. Who, with that committee, together with the CEO, will actually account to the minister. So there's a missing link there. Unless if I'm actually convinced otherwise. But for now, Chairperson, I'm saying, let's give tea the advisory. I'm not really concerned about the name. Whether you say council, whether you say board, whether you say the advisory committee, it is in the nature of their operation that gives a difference in terms of governance. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Thank you.
Comment before giving to the If I may comment on the definition of advisory committee, the only definition proposed in cases like this is say an advisory committee refers to a committee established in terms of that particular section, which will be in section 4. Whatever function, composition must be contained in that section, not in the definition, because the language is a true definition. It's only for the purposes of clarity. So if it needs to be given more instances, that must be done in section 4. To the establishing the committee. Can I move further to the point which was raised in terms of the interference of any body? I think the proposal from the page 2 of the CAC document, which is in clause 2.1.2.2, will be reversed as a set of the mid-ground in this case, because it reads, the authority is required to be impartial and perform its function without fear, favor, or prejudice. So that explains that there must be no interference without any.
Did you say page 2?
Page 2, yes.
Number?
Clause 2, then P, letter E, paragraph E of the CAC document.
They've got numbers there, numerals, or is it other document? Oh yeah, okay. I'll check that one. Yeah.
The authority is required to be impartial and perform its function without fear, favor, or prejudice. Their document continues and says free from any political or commercial interference. But that is not really necessary because the free word without fear, favor, or prejudice is enough. So that we don't need to list the political, commercial, because we're leaving out other things like religious or whatever it was.
What is human? Oh, yeah.
Thank you. I think those are the two issues that I wanted to comment on, unless there's anything specific rather can affect it.
I want you to include this process because in the morning we have other federal advisors now. This has been
Thank you, Chair. My name is Ndombi Nikiso. I'm dealing with this specific bill since the National Assembly. I'm the special advisor from the Office of the Chief Special Advisor, Emma Daniel.
Thank you very much. Over to you, Mr. Department.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Maybe starting with the clause on the authority to interact without fear, favor. I believe it's the reason that you can go. I don't think there is much except that it is the kind of wording that I think was borrowed from the NPA Act, basically, where you're dealing with highly sensitive issues where the issues of intimidation are the order of the day with regard to the national officials doing that. It is well placed for those kind of institutions, but I believe even in this instance, something that we can it shouldn't be much of a problem. Now, coming to the honorable Tejeng, this is around the Budget Committee. Our mandate as drafted has been clear. That we are not creating a board or a council or anything that comprises part-time persons, as it is the case now, with regard to the Medicines Control Council. That we are creating an authority that will be full-time, that will be able to exercise all the functions that are assigned to it in terms of the Act. Now, in that context, there is only one entity that makes decisions. It is the authority. Any other body that you create could be advisory, which is what we are saying with regard to the advisory committee. And if you look at it, we are confining it work to governance issues only. And I must emphasize that they don't make any decisions. They simply advise the minister and the authority as of proposing it with regard to governance issues. That does not take away the provision in the bill that says that the minister, so that the Minister of Public Service Administration, determine the structure of the authority. That's the main. So it has been our understanding from the instructions we got from the policy people that we are creating an authority that will make decisions. But any other person around this, whether it be committees or the advisory committee, is making that decision. And that's why we are saying the authority is a juristic person, which means it can be sued and sued in its own name. So the honourable member is right to say that the advisory committee has not sit in the sense of it not making decisions. They advise.
that should be fine. It's a pity the Honourable Student Notice wanted to deal with the issues that he raised about around the role of the minister. Basically, he said if members look at the document that we had prepared that deals with the differences between the two bills, the first one as introduced in the National Assembly and the one that we have now, there is a huge difference in terms of the powers that were given to the minister. Which the National Assembly did not agree with, in fact, expand from the bill. In that version of the bill, we were saying that it takes more than safety, efficacy, and quality of medicine to make a determination whether the product is reusable or not. And we're saying that public interest is one issue that should be looked at when an application for the recreational medicine is received. And we in the version that was introduced in the NA, we're saying that the authority will only look at safety, quality, and efficacy of medicine, and then issue a certificate to that effect. And that if the applicant wants to market the product, then the application must be forwarded to the minister, who decides on whether to register or not register the product. And we said that the minister will basically, in doing that, take into account public interest. We define public interest to our determinant. When we were taking that bill to the National Assembly, we did not see anything wrong with that arrangement. We did a comparative study of how many countries register their medicine. In many of them, it is the minister who registers medicine, anyway. In the UK, it is the minister who registers medicine. In the USA also, it is the minister who registers medicine. A number of countries, also in Africa, some of them, it is the minister who registers medicine. Because we had believed at the time, or that's what the policy people had believed, and that's what also cabinet believed, because they passed the bill in that format, that you have a strong role for the minister, especially for the public interest issue. But that's the part that has been expanded by the National Assembly. So we are dealing with the bill at a point where we no longer have those kind of provisions. But, I mean, like, as always, we take instructions from the community.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, we've got 30 minutes to round up to close up the meeting. Are there any other follow-ups from the meeting? No. So do we...
No,
no,
sir.
No, I'm saying that will be like there are no follow-ups, but I see two things in the car. I wanted to suggest the process.
Is it a follow-up
petition? Yeah. It is a follow-up petition because I'm just going through the other submissions, particularly the ones that the state law advisor was actually quoting from the TAC document that is actually here, which I also see that the one of the proposals that came from the department is actually also contained in the TAC. That organ of state and within the public followers is also there. Yeah, Chairperson, I think we may actually ignore the issues that we're raising. We're not really asking for calling for the board or the council. If this becomes an authority, I've just given an example of the Central Drug Authority that we have actually dealt with the law, with the bill here. Which at the end of the day, certain things are done within that particular authority, which reports to the minister. And there are certain decisions that lie in that particular authority in terms of their daily operations and daily functions. And which I don't have a problem with that is approach. But I'm saying the checks and balances that we need in terms of accountability there is what concerns me. And when I look at the proposals put by the TAC on page 2, specifically for that, I think I'm quite comfortable with most of the things that they've actually proposed in there. Okay. To try to deal with this particular concern that some of us are having. And we seem not to be, as a committee, wanting to look into what has been presented, whether that will be good or not good, or whether as a committee we're still going to engage in this, because I don't think we've engaged the TAC and the innovative medicines input. So, and I find some of the information that has been proposed here is very valuable, addresses our concerns that we do have. But also that I wanted to deal with this element of conviction without a fine. I know there are petty crimes, but there are certain crimes, I think it's in terms of your act, whether it's Schedule 7 and 9, those that are very serious. There are those that the act classifies as very, very, what is the word? That serious offenses. We can, in terms of this, and I accept that, I mean, I have a traffic fine, I pay that. It's a fine. If I don't pay, they may put me into jail. I mean, those. But in terms of the law, there are certain acts of which you and you, there are certain serious offenses. I think if I'm not mistaken, they're either Schedule 7 or Schedule 9, not of the Constitution, but of the criminal, yeah. Now, I'm saying, for me, it will address this thing, because if you say, without an option of a fine, are there, unless if we say, those are, you'll never be given a fine, your work is just to go to jail. But we have seen that the cops, there was a saying to say, ignorant of the law does not mean or you cannot be found guilty. That's how the law has been, but there has been a judgment where a person says, I did not know. It's a precedent set by the court, which means today as we sit here, if you don't know certain things, the presiding officer might weigh and say, well, this person didn't know. And he may not be found guilty because he didn't know. But the bottom line has been that if you don't know the law, it doesn't mean that you cannot be found guilty on it. You violated the law and yet you didn't know. Now, that was the approach that I'm saying on this conviction, to say maybe we need to classify, because I don't want political issues, crimes, or if that is the way, the correct way, to really be involved here, because there are politics involved in that particular element. But I think we're looking at certain types of offenses that we make, because I'm just having a problem with the way with without the option of a fine. Maybe we can qualify those particular offenses that are actually there. Now, also on your TAC submission on page 3, the last 4C, the CEO, who has been appointed for 5 years, but there's a C there that says, is accountable to Parliament and reports to the Minister. Now, we have there, is accountable to, I think we just said, is accountable to the Minister. Now, it is that element. Parliament is an accounting leg of our government. And the minister is also accountable. We provide oversight over the minister and this particular authority. Now, we have not included that element of accountability to Parliament. With the proposal here from TAC, he's saying the CEO should be accountable to Parliament and report to the minister. Now, the reporting and accountability, I assume that reporting to the minister, that will mean that now he or she is accountable to the minister on a daily function. All things that the CEO will appoint, whoever do that, are really a problem, because that's the machinery that the CEO wants. But the accountability element there is lacking, and I'm quite happy with this proposal to say this person must be accountable to Parliament and report to the minister. Now, there are substantive proposals from TAC. I want to check with you, Chairperson, as we go through the procedures, whether we are going to engage the TAT proposals in terms of concerns that have been there, and some of them are really clearly worked out in here, and some we can find elsewhere that are that we do have. Thank you.
Thank you. I think that the department this morning, after listening to the presentation, both from stakeholders, has tried to cover them in this document. But as you'll see, maybe some of them are not covered here. We'll check at the committee. And there was another point you raised about regulation. I don't know whether Mr. Ramasala has answered it. Either has missed it. I think today, after we are done, before lunch, deliberation we had, including the presentation.
I really think that, you know, when we say that this is a state organ, or an organ of the state, that to me suggests that it is accountable to Parliament. It does come to Parliament at one stage or another. You know, so to and also PMA, yes. So to put it in the piece of legislation here, for me it's neither here nor there, you know. We have passed so many laws and created so many, I mean, state organs, and we have never really indicated that these things is accountable to Parliament. But for me, I mean, does not really mean anything. It's quite, I mean, implied. The whole question of accountability to Parliament. And you remember when Mr. Parliament made the presentation, when you look at Act for instance, number 2, number 3, they said the authority may inquire into report and make, because they can't tell the certain laws there, like the same accountable to the minister. So try to. For me, it's really covered. And to say, because in any case, the backstop with the department, the backstop with the minister, if there's any problem anywhere, because it is an organ of state that actually is established by the department of that thing, if there's anything, then you can call the minister. Call the minister, structure itself, to come here. If it is not indicated here, that does not suggest that it is not therefore accountable in any way. It does not mean that. And I'm saying we have passed so many laws. And on the question of this whole question of option of a final law, I think we have also passed so many laws in Parliament. So many laws that actually does indicate that without an option of a fine. Because once there's an option of a fine, it means that crime that was committed is a very minor crime. Serious criminal offenses, they do not have an option of a fine. If they say 15 years, you have raped, it is 15 years. You'll never find a judge saying, or whoever, 15 years or a man saying, or 20,000 or whatever. It does not have that.
There are precedents in the law already.
Which precedents?
Okay. Yes.
No. I'm saying there's a precedent already.
We'll show you.
Don't you want to consider precedents? Don't be selective. If there's a precedent in the law to that effect, I'm saying there's a precedent in the law to the effect that we have passed laws which have an option of a fine. So why don't you want to consider that precedent?
Precedents are the decisions of the court. They are not the law issues. They are issues of the court.
We gave you a chance. We listened to you. We never interfered. Honorable
Sikona? I think I'm covered by Honorable Dolo. If you understand the definition of an organ of state and the inference in the bill on the Public Finance Management Act, I think it's Section 3. Am I right? No debate, no doubt about that. Even a first year student at the university using public administration will understand that inference alone presupposes accountability to Parliament. So I think it's covered, Chairperson. I'm covered by Honorable Dolo. I'm not sure that, because we must not confuse issues here. In terms, I'm not sure whether it's constitutional or our electoral law. There are precedences. And those precedences, as far as I'm concerned, they have never been challenged by court of law, to come with a new jurisprudence from the written statute. it goes further, for instance, in terms of eligibility to hold public office. To say, a person who has been convicted, but not without an option of a fine for a period of 12 months, that kind of a thing. But I think it's a standard operating procedure. And I don't want to sound to be legal here. I think that issue is there in the Constitution. It's there in other laws. And there are still have considerations on that. There's nobody who will give you a fine if you have you're committed, as Honorable Dolan said, certain serious crimes. It is a fact, Honorable Chetep, that we must not allow our perceptions and our values to cloud our judgment on legal issues. Here's a person who has killed another person in an accident. What is it called? Is it murder or culpable homicide? The only competent person to make determination on the basis of evidence. It's a serious crime emotionally. I've lost my child. But the court may find that Mr. Tseng never had any intention to commit this particular crime. It's a fact that this person has died. And he gives you a fine and suspended for 5 year sentence. May find that here's a person who's been found to have committed whether it's fraud or whatever. But given circumstances and the weight of evidence before a presiding officer within a court of law, he may arrive at a decision not to impose a sentence, but say, no, we are actually giving you 7 years suspended with a fine of 7,000. So that one belongs to the court of law, how they interpret this. But as far as I'm concerned, it has never changed our current practice where we say a fine is a fine and for whatever, and you cannot. And if you read Criminal Procedure Act, Chairperson, I don't know which section, which deals with schedules of offenses, where they say for rape, it's mandatory for diesel. I think those things are really classified, for what crime and whatever. And I don't think here we are talking about those things. If you have raped, either you are guilty or you are innocent. There's no way in which you can be given a fine for raping. No doubt about that. If it's a murder, either you are guilty and you are sentenced. There's no way in which you can be found. You can be fined about that. So I think we must be careful about that. I know some of the issues are quite emotive in the public domain, but we must really balance our own values and our judgment to the realities of governance. Thank you.
Thank you,
Honorable
Member. Members,
yes. Chairperson?
May I be
given?
Is this a follow-up or a
dialogue? No, it's an issue, Chairperson. I think I've been in a meeting. I must raise issues that I feel that are relevant.
Are there new issues?
There may be new, there might be follow-ups, combination of all.
Okay, but you're going to send me those of the issues.
Yeah, Chairperson, thanks.
Don't repeat, just go straight to the point.
Chairperson, can you listen to what I'm saying? Give me time, and you'll rule once I'm finished.
No, I'll give you time, but the time has been limited.
Yeah, Chairperson, I really thank the Honorable Member for the lecture that he's given. And I really appreciate that. We learn every day. But thanks for putting us here, knowing exactly that what you want us to do is to really come with a document for us just to waste time, sit here, talk about it, and not really consider what our inputs are. Chairperson, I think we need to learn from experience in terms of when you do a law or a bill is in front of us, is for it to serve the community and serve its purpose in terms of accountability and allow the minister to do his job or his job. And we need to learn from those particular issues that we're raising here. We're not becoming emotional. We are really saying that now, as Parliament, we must actually hold our executive accountable. For them, as and when they carry their functions, we're able to say, here, you're not doing it right. And we have seen with some other act, with the SABC board, what is happening. Things are somersaulting now. Chairperson, the governance element in this particular act, bill, sorry, that is in front of us, are still a concern for us. And the advisory committees that have been proposed here are unacceptable because they don't have an authority.
Now, and as we do a law not because there is a particular kind of a minister who is understanding. We do it such that as and when new faces come and go, they still operate within that particular law. It's not about this other minister is good or a particular institution is good. Now, the advisory committees, as they are here, they are not acceptable. We are not even defined what they are. And I really feel that the governance elements of this particular authority are not taken care of. And I think I need to be protected.
Point of order, Mr. Teteng speaks as if he's speaking on behalf of all of us. He keeps on using the word we. It's not acceptable to us. I think that this is Section 75, so he must be very clear and say the DA does not agree with this or that or that. But don't include all of us in increasing perspective.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. As a DA member, I want to ANC to learn that we don't do work here to suit organizational issues. As a DA person, we're not happy that there are no governance issues, and I want the ANC members to really acknowledge and accept that we're not doing this thing to serve the interests of the organization. We're here to deal with matters of the law or the bill in front of us, to deal with matters that are actually going to serve and service the community. The authority that is actually proposed here, it's not accountable. Whatever arguments that have been brought here by the honorable members are not sufficing. We really propose that the governance issue should be revisited, give a structure that the CEO will be accountable for, because everything is given in the hands of the CEO, and we're saying this is an authority that we do. We have passed laws here where we got authorities there are checks and balances in terms of their performance and functions. Now, yes, I represent the DA. I'm not comfortable with this, and I want to say to the ANC, learn from experience. Learn from the ACDC board that you're trying to be messing it up, and now things are being turned around because now there's a different speaker, the different minister. I'm speaking as a DA. I'm addressing the ANC that I can. No. The honourable member made a point of order. I'm speaking here now as a DA. Again.
Point of order,
Chairperson.
The subject matter before this committee is not the SABC board.
Yeah,
that's my point of order.
That's why I was saying.
It's an example of the law that is in front of the house.
Our time is up, department.
Thank you for suppressing me.
Okay.
No wonder things are shaping up in the way that they are.
You
are no more going to have that power. It's gone. It's gone.
You are not going to be the opposition anymore.
We are going to be. Your power is going, gone. I have a right as a person to campaign any time of the day, my dear honorable sister. Thank you very much.
Wasn't this a threat? Let's close this issue this way. To put our perspective clearly, unequivocally, and courageously. And we listen to other perspectives. Can the honorable member make specific proposals so that as you come back tomorrow, we consider those proposals? I think that's the essence of democracy. I think it will prove, not to ourselves, maybe subjective when we deal with this question, who is not listening to who, and who is grandstanding, and who is dealing with issues of substance. I think it will help ourselves. And I want to appeal to all of the members, to allow all of the anyone is on the platform to speak. We must listen to him, even if he's annoying. Also, we must listen to him, but engage him, you know, quite robust.
Robustly, of course.
We've said certain things, and I thought he has a right to disagree with us. And maybe when we come to the final deliberation, we consider his proposals on those issues. And we are excellent against that. I think we'll have sufficient time tomorrow to deal with that.
Thank you very much, honorable member. I think earlier on, I proposed that, that he had something to put on the table. He said,
I didn't ask other people that I have to leave there. I'm just saying, honorable members, we are not finalizing this bill today. Honorable Kete will give us some other input, and then I'm going to request the department, because I think we all agree on the all these documents presented by the department, except few things that the honorable Kete will raise. And then we'll give it to the our state law advisor to go and prepare the document from their side. And I hope we'll request the education tomorrow committee to give us a slot between 12 and 1 to deliberate and finalize on this matter. Do you agree, honorable member?
Chairperson, can I just raise something that through you?
Okay.
Chairperson, when we deal with matters, I don't have a problem to do some proposals elsewhere. But on the main, I think if there's a clause on the main where we feel uncomfortable, normally what procedurally here, you'll find the department, if we agree, we'll say, well, this is what we think as an option. So to plow things back into my head now, it's as if now everybody here who has been having a concern, you have asked the person to go and prepare something to talk to it. I don't think that's a proper way. I'm not saying if there's anything that I have to put, I won't do it. But I'm saying, Chair, procedural as they've been doing, if there are concerns, normally the department and the legal guys will go and say, there's this, on this issue, there's this option, it might be viable, it might not be viable. So I just wanted to deal with that, because if the approach is, if one honorable member is not comfortable, go and do a proposal, I think we'll be losing it.
I was just saying you've been lamenting on an issue, but you don't have a point to say the department. How about 81234? Is what I've been expecting from honorable members.
As we need to finalize this here today, we must therefore give the AA an opportunity to come with concrete proposals in our next meeting, so that we can engage with him on those proposals. So I hope and trust that he will do so, because we don't want to suppress anyone in this city. Thank you, sir.
The department has to look at those concerns and please go and work for me.
That's why your ministers are not accountable to your parliament.
explain.
You will never take it. Until the second time.